Hey everyone, it's Billy Morrison and Ozzy Osbourne here. Our new show, The Madhouse Chronicles, is dropping this April. Join us as we watch and react to the maddest internet clips. What do we discuss, Ozzy?
Drugs, rock and roll, aliens, all that kind of shit.
Drugs, rock and roll, aliens, and all that kinds of shit. Visit osbournemediahouse.com for early access. What do you say? Do you think it's the wildest show on the internet?
You're in the madhouse now.
Today's Talking Simpsons is brought to you by BarkBox, and you can go to getbarkbox.com/lasertime to get a free month of doggy delights.
I heartily endorse this event or product.
Ahoy, hoy, everybody. Welcome to Talking Simpsons, where we've got beats. This is the Laser Time Podcast Network's chronological exploration of The Simpsons. I am your host, Bob, Big Chief Crazy Cone Mackey. Who else is here today?
Chris Antista with a stolen nickname from Bob.
And I'm Henry, a big fan of Poison Pizza.
My name is not Bog, by the way, at least outside of Twitter, it's not. And today's episode is Itchy and Scratchy, the movie, which aired on a Tuesday, November 3rd, 1992.
Chris,
something very important happened on this day in history. You're lucky. Can tell us.
Oh, I got it, Bobby.
Important news Bob was referring to is that Elton John signs a record-breaking recording contract
exactly.
for $39 million, and I had to pad this segment because this week's news will have to stretch across two episodes because The Simpsons tonight is airing unopposed by any other television shows because every other network in primetime is running the election results as Bill Clinton wins the 1992 presidency.
Question, were you guys watching this episode during that? Because
yes.
I was.
Hell yes. Why would I care about an election? I'm sure I knew more than I did in 88 just because I would watch the SNL clips and they were so funny. And I knew that Bill Clinton was a killbilly and that the other two were old ladies.
I looked around. I didn't listen to commentary, but I was bumbling around for some insights here. You look at the schedule. Everybody was talking about the election. It seems like almost ballsy Mad Rupert Murdoch counter programming to like fuck everybody else. Then we're gonna be the only people in primetime on network airing a new episode of our show on a night it never airs.
It's kind of like when MTV would air new Beavis and Butthead shorts during the Super Bowl halftime. Yeah, mm-hmm. I love the Butt Bowl. I think it was called. Yeah,
I miss Super Bowl halftime counter programming. That was such a '90s thing, and now it's dead.
Living Color live.
But this, I think a lot of people didn't think there was any way the Democrats would take back the White House. And
Sideshow Bob Warren. Us.
He did.
I'll be back on the streets with all my criminal buddies.
So it wasn't a foregone conclusion that Clinton was going to take.
Most people thought Bill wasn't going to even get to win the primary.
Like, he may not have Perot didn't ruin so many votes.
Bush ruined that election like a Japanese banquet, though. So not my joke.
Bush sucked, but also Perot kind of really hurt him, and that's why both parties from then on were like, please no third party, like. You will kill us in the presidency. Mm-hmm. Like, it happens every... You always lose some votes, and if you're as... if you suck as much as Al Gore did at beating a complete imbecile like George W. Bush, then that third party, that 3% of a third party will get you. But... seeing the Perot bits make me go like, man, he is so much more respectable than Gary Johnson.
God, of course, yes, he is. It's so crazy.
You see Gary Johnson in interviews, like, he doesn't even have like a PR person to comb his hair. Let's just comb your hair. Can we just do that?
He fell off a turnip truck, and it's so weird to think that we are almost 70 episodes into The Simpsons, and we are just hitting Clinton's America with this episode. It's so strange.
It's true. Yeah. I always equate it with the Clinton administration.
Oh, I can almost smell my first pubic hair.
Please, I really don't want to. This episode opens with a bit from The Critic. Well, what would eventually become The Critic?
Boy.
It's just so criticky.
Yes.
Captain, Klingons off the starboard bow.
Again with the Klingons.
Nearly 25 years ago, it's a joke about how the Star Trek cast is getting old.
Yeah. We're almost down to half.
So this is Star Trek 12, So Very Tired, with great impersonations of all the original cast. Back then, it was a funny joke to do because we were between Star Trek 5 and 6. Mm-hmm. 5 was them trying to pretend they weren't super old, but everybody's like, you're really old. And then 6
was
like...
Oh, come on.
Like,
he was climbing the mountain, Henry. I saw it.
Why is he climbing the mountain?
But the captain or the Uhura body double.
Yes.
Holy crap.
Per Dance of the Seven Veils.
Holy crap.
No, fan dance. But then in 6, they made 6 going like, this is the last one. You
and
are all
great.
Old. You're retiring. Mm-hmm. This is it. Mm-hmm. And so... this joke happens between it, and when I see it now, maybe it's because James Doohan is no longer with us,
yeah.
But I thought the joke was a little just too mean of like, and Scotty's gotten fat. He wasn't fat in the 60s. Like, yeah, you're all, I'd like to see how fat the rest of you Simpsons writers are to 40 years later.
Everyone
like,
just gets wider, even if they don't get fatter. So
I gotta say, I'm always shocked to when I do see an episode of the original series and like, that's Scotty?
I mean, yeah, that was my reaction, too. I only knew Scotty as
movies.
Mustache guy who's fat and
yes.
has gray hair.
I love the Futurama episode with the Star Trek cast where they couldn't get James Doohan, so they got another character and called him Welshie.
Good old Welshie.
And he died. Welshie! Yeah.
But
I never got the reference.
Oh, really?
Just,
okay.
Yes, until just now. I know, it's the last Futurama episode, I believe.
I think it's
the Fox Run.
Maybe second to last? I thought the Devil's Hands Are Idle Playthings.
No, Devil's Hands Are Idle Playthings are the last
one. I thought it was meant to be the finale. Never.
But anywho, another reason why I feel like this one is too mean is I got to watch the original cast watch this bit.
What?
Because
ooh.
It was on, I think it was on one of those like 30th anniversary of Star Trek things. It would be 96 if it was 30th.
Well, I guess it's not a surprise that Jess had its 20th anniversary, the 30th anniversary special hosted by Ted Danson.
So on the 30th anniversary special, I believe this was where it was. It might have been somewhere else. Ben Stiller comes out, mm-hmm. who was moderately successful at the time, mm-hmm. but was not megastar Ben Stiller. But he comes out to say what a big Star Trek fan he is, specifically the original series. And then he intros this clip.
Mm-hmm.
And when the clip's done, it ends on that joke of Scotty being too fat to reach the controls, and then it cuts to James Doohan's face. Like the producer's like, well, let's see his reaction to it. And I think he's nicely laughing at it, like, ha ha.
Hurting inside.
It's so mean to James Doohan.
I'm on a juice diet.
If you've watched the film Trekkies, mm-hmm. you will get a whole new appreciation for James Doohan because he tells a story of somebody, a fan calling him and saying they want to kill themselves and him talking them out of suicide and then meeting them years and years later at a Star Trek convention and saying, like,
that.
Remember how I was the one who called and said I was going to kill myself and now I got a college degree and I've got a big job and it's all thanks to you. And it was just, like, beautiful.
Wow.
Beautiful. Anyway,
and
so...
you need to say, keep watching that Star Trek anniversary special if you'd like to see The Bridge of the Enterprise with only the cast of Frasier, because that is what happens. That is exactly what happens.
I love the line again with the Klingons.
It's what I remember when I think of Star Trek parodies, because like I think Family Guy opened like 19 of them. Also very funny. I love the way they made William Shatner move, but so very tired is the Star Trek joke I remember.
And Facebook has that On This Day feature, at least of this recording during this recording, and a few days ago, I clicked back, and like 9 years ago, my Facebook update was just, again, with the Klingons. So
Klingons.
It's very appropriate that we're doing this episode now.
All right, but
this
episode,
it is, I don't know, like again, we talked about in the Halloween episode previously, a lot of these references went over the head of 11-year-old little me, but not this one.
No way.
This was celebrating an entire medium, sending up an entire genre. I thought, I never get tired of watching this episode. I love it so much.
So, you know, we grew up in mostly in a post-Roger Rabbit world, which was all about seeing, like, specials on Termite Terrace, specials on how do they make Disney cartoons.
Yeah.
Like, do you guys remember the one of Carol Burnett showing how they animate a cartoon?
Yeah. No, but I remember, like, all of those things I remember verbatim in my head. It takes 1,000 drawings to make a 7-minute cartoon. No idea where I heard that, but I watched those things all the time.
And around this era, every cartoon would have an episode about making a cartoon or what entailed the making of a cartoon, like Tiny Toons did, of course, and like every like Beavis and Butthead. So many were about making a cartoon because I mean, the people making the show were making cartoons.
Yeah.
They're 4 years in, their lives are making cartoons. They don't have a life anymore, so they got to write about it. But this begins with the parent teacher conference. I really love when Bart says, "Oh, you kid," and the way Marge says, "Thank you, Bart."
It's a great line. Might
hubba,
be my line
hubba.
Of the show.
Oh, you kid. Thank you, dear. Now be good for Grandpa while we're at the parent-teacher meeting. We'll bring back dinner.
What are we gonna have? Well, that depends on what your teachers say. If you've been good, pizza. If you've been bad, let's see, poison.
What if one of us has been good and one of us has been bad? Poison pizza.
Oh, no, I'm not making two stops.
That might be my line of the show.
That's great.
I'll just throw it out. Maybe it'll be topped. I don't know. Oh, no, I had
That's
another one.
The joke.
Never mind. Keep going.
Okay, but the dynamic of this episode of Bart versus Homer, but it's so different because you think from the previous episodes, Homer is the super disciplinarian who strangles
Bart.
You
think he's the mean one.
But he's mean in instances, but he's also like a total pushover in the long run.
And I get that a lot more now being an adult. How the fuck do you punish a kid? Like, thinking of me grounding one of my friend's kids for 2 weeks, like, I'd never be able to hold up to that.
Yeah.
Of course I'm going to forget. Of course I felt like as a kid I could get away with murder because my parents couldn't hold to that. They don't want to see me miserable for 2 weeks.
Like, this is not really coming from nowhere, though. In Camp Krusty, we saw Homer, Bart didn't get good grades, and he's like, well, you shouldn't have to suffer for my bad judgment, so go to Camp Krusty. Like, but I think it's really like Homer is too lazy to punish Bart.
Yeah. Mm.
And it's less that, less of him wanting to baby Bart, but it's more like being lazy.
He did mention that. He's like, I didn't want to hang around the house all the time.
Yeah,
anyway, but this is all the things Bart has done.
Bart has been guilty of the following atrocities: synthesizing a laxative from peas and carrots, replacing my birth control pills with Tic Tacs.
Well, I'm sorry. I'm sure Bart doesn't really mean to be bad.
Now's our chance to be bad.
So Bart has to be really bad.
He's at his worst.
But he's real cute in this episode
for
some reason.
I mean,
I don't know.
He's
pulling up the carpet. Look at him.
Well, he is abusing Grandpa. So,
okay, the dark joke about Arthur and the fireworks. Where did he see the fireworks? They cut away so that they don't tell you he put them in his growing area, but like, if he did, like, Bart's in jail. Like, that's a crime.
He's in juvie. But I did want to ask you guys, like, did your parents go to these? Because as in Homer the Heretic, I established my parents had no time for God, so of course they had no time for the PTA.
Oh.
So I really locked out. Like, there were none of these meetings, none of these conversations. I was a good kid, though. But
all the time, and if there's anybody under the age of 8 listening, your teachers look bad if they say you're bad. So all of my
they don't get funding.
I was the worst. My teachers hated me. I had some things that are like borderline illegal happen to me from being misbehaving.
You are Bart.
But every time they said Chris is a really smart guy, but can't seem to focus himself.
They gave you a real compliment sandwich.
Yeah, but it's like, but that's the thing. A teacher can't insult you because it reflects poorly upon them in almost all cases. So kids, if you're under 8, and I know most of you are, I've seen the demos. do whatever you want.
And meanwhile, Homer gets all the good stuff because he's there for Lisa.
To Lisa. But I do love this because I think if I'm I keep viewing this through the eyes of a soon-to-be parent, which I'm not, but like, there's really no other evolution I can take as a human being at this point.
Do I hear the stork?
But I just call this clip How Disciplined, because I think I would have a difficult time with this.
Are you kidding? Lisa turned out perfect. I won't stand here and listen to you bad-mouthing Lisa.
We're talking about Bart.
Oh, that guy.
I think the problem here is discipline. If Bart does something wrong, you should punish him.
Well, we try. But he has this way of making us think we've punished him when actually we've completely caved in.
He's the boy you love to hate.
Well, you've got to start being firm with him. I believe with persistent discipline, even the poorest student can end up becoming, oh, say, Chief Justice of the Supreme Court.
Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. What great men he would join. John Marshall, Charles Evans Hughes, Warren Burger. Burger.
I love the running Supreme Court justice jokes, and that Homer knows an astounding amount of Supreme Court justices. Ask me to name two.
It's a weird bit of knowledge he possesses.
I know William Taft was one.
I do want to mention two things about Homer being in Miss Hoover's classroom. Yeah. One, he makes armpit fart noises through his clothes. Once again, we saw that in Bart the Genius. And two, he's sitting behind what looks like the prototype for Ralph Wiggum's dad before he was a Wiggum. It's like literally an adult Ralph is in front of Homer in these Miss Hoover scenes. So look for that guy.
The trivia on the wiki had pointed out that Ralph's parents are clearly not there.
Yeah.
But I see.
But Homer squeezing into the desk is great animation.
I love that.
And we get a little taste of what a flashback will look like in Lisa's first words. Oh, like they're drawn
that's right.
the same way that they will be in that flashback episode when he's reading TV Guide and about how Fonzie's worried he's losing his cool.
That I didn't get that joke is great. The three R's of TV Guide. Renewing TV Guide.
Reading, writing to, and renewing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Homer, so also I love just Grandpa's teeth. Like, it's a yeah. great little run.
I like how the teeth are just like orbs or dice or something. Yeah. They're so weird.
There's a lot of... But that's what I... Well, one, we haven't even got to the story of the episode, which is a celebration of animation.
The story literally starts with Act 2. Like, yeah. Everything else is a prelude to Itchy and Scratchy.
But the amount of squash and stretch and, like, animation techniques on display here are insane.
So Rich Moore would direct some great episodes with great animation, including sure. Cape Fear. He would go on to be the supervising director of Futurama. Mm-hmm. This
and
episode
the critic.
And the critic. And the
this
critic. Episode
and I just rewatched Zootopia. I'm going to make a couple recommendations here. That might be my... It's in my top five
movies. Did he direct Zootopia?
He co-directed okay. it, or at least co-wrote wow. it.
And he directed Wreck-It Ralph, am I correct?
Indeed.
Yes,
yeah.
that's right.
That's where I got to interview him, as I've mentioned on
if
this
you
podcast.
If you think Zootopia looks stupid, it's because for some reason the promotional things did not tell you it was a film noir about casual racism.
It didn't tell you anything.
it doesn't say that anywhere. I'm like, this is surprisingly weird for a Disney film, and it's amazing.
The ad campaign was like, get this, guys. What if animals could talk?
Yeah, exactly.
And I was like you've done this for 100 years.
But it's funny. It's beautiful. It's deeply moving, and that movie is really good.
I still
good.
Want to see it. It
really
looks really
good.
Cool.
Good old Bang Bang Bart, man. I love Bang Bang Bart. That
fast for me to love Bang.
I felt bad that this was a nightmarish future of Bart, where Bart was not there to say cool after it ended.
But just the way he like, ugh, the way he's
so wait, we have
groaning on the ground.
We have Gambling Hag Lisa. Yeah. We have Drifter Bart. Yes. We have Bang Bang Bart. I think I'm missing one more dark future.
Fuck, which one was it?
Dark
God.
Future. I'm thinking of when he got strangled in that courtroom and that.
Oh, the Rockstar Bart.
Oh, Rockstar Bart.
Off, man.
God, I love these dark futures.
But he fucks up Grandpa's teeth. And that is, like, in hindsight, now as an adult, so goddamn gross to put another person's dentures
but
in your mouth.
I love the shot of him hanging from the ceiling
so,
fan blade and the background spinning behind him. Yeah.
I love all of it. And I love
and
the
him
animation.
Biting the records is such a, like, it's
Bart
an
taping
oldie
them
time.
Up. And, yeah, and spinning them out. Like, all the animation here is, like, The Simpsons is... very rarely functioning like a real cartoon.
Yeah. When Grandpa's teeth hit the floor, it sounds like dice are rolling across
like
linoleum.
When he pulls them out of his mouth in this sequence.
If you don't start making more sense, we're going to have to put you in a home.
You already put me in a home.
Then we'll put you in the crooked home it's on 60 Minutes.
When he pulls the tape off, it's like this fireworks flourish of things and frames of animation the Simpsons normally don't get. It's a really pretty episode.
Teeth eventually are stuck on his forehead.
Yes, I love the animation of Grandpa waking up with the ball of tape and teeth in his mouth.
And this is just... but and then you have written comedy, and this is all beautiful.
Look what your bad egg of a son did to my teeth!
Dad, you and your stories. Bart broke my teeth. The nurses are stealing my money. This thing on my neck is getting bigger.
Now this is exactly what Bart's teacher was talking about. Our son did something wrong and you looked the other way.
But Marge, look at that hangdog expression. He's learned his lesson. Let's get him a present.
Please, Homer, why do I always have to be the bad guy?
All right. Young man, since you broke Grandpa's teeth, he gets to break yours.
Oh, this is going to be sweet.
No.
Oh.
Bart, we're sending you to bed without your supper.
Yeah, right. Like you're going to let me go hungry. I'll be eating that pizza in 5 minutes.
Bart, stop being confident.
I love
that's
that.
That's a good line.
Yeah.
I like that.
Stop being confident. Chris, you did not capture, I think, what is my line in the show.
Which
is, time really flies when you're reading the Bible. Ew. Yeah.
The way he just like slowly backs away from it.
This is my favorite moment as a kid, and it's real quick. It doesn't do well in audio, but again, a beautiful animated gag.
I'm starving. Somebody bring me some food, quick.
I'm a coming, boy.
Get back here.
It's so quick, but it's Homer running up what looks like, I don't know, to the seventh story of the Simpsons house. He's running so fast with pizza in his hand.
The animation on that, and also Bart seeing Santa's Little Helper's head as a pizza box was really good.
With
animation.
Like the pizza tongue coming out of the box. Yeah, really cute.
Even as a kid, and now if someone was prohibiting me from eating pizza while the smells were going on in the house, people would get murdered. I would not put up with that for a second.
I think this did teach kids bad lessons of like, oh, you can manipulate your parents. Like,
and
you
I did.
Have some power here.
I did.
They can't
I did
let you die.
Yeah, there wasn't many ways. Like, you can't watch TV. Well, what I'm going to do is go down to the garage sale and buy a $10 black and white TV, hollow out the furniture you gave me, and hide it inside. Fuck you. And that's how I watch most of The Simpsons, by the way.
That's
a fucking 13-inch black and white television on Fox 49.
That's called a technicality, Chris.
Yeah. But this is they finally introduce what...
Oh, wait. Yeah, Jasper also... He tries to... I live a little bit of... Oh, Grandpa trying to steal Jasper's teeth, and then Jasper sleeps in his bed with like a 9mm. That's pretty
strange.
If it
isn't the old guy fairy.
This is great, but this is what the whole theme of the episode is.
Coming for Christmas, the Itchy and Scratchy Movie.
Bart, come quick, there's an Itchy and Scratchy Movie.
You'll find it in the Itchy and Scratchy Movie, coming soon to a theater near you. 53% new footage.
So that joke... You might not get it now, but this is why it's a good animation joke, because animated films are very expensive to produce and always have been. And in the theaters, the Looney Tunes in general were represented by compilation films where the original animators, Friz Freleng and Chuck Jones, what are we talking about? Looney, Bugs Bunny movie.
The Bugs Bunny and Roadrunner movie.
Quackbusters.
I watched that one a lot.
Fantastic Island.
Yeah, whatever.
Things like Heathcliff the movie was just like, here are some of my old adventures.
that is so awful.
Well, and also the He-Man movie, too. Like, they all recycled animation. Like, only Disney. And Disney wasn't making many new cartoons then either.
It's really difficult to convey the excitement of an Itchy and Scratchy movie. Because, like, really the only thing I compare it to is me being, like, 27 in a Simpsons movie coming out. Like, yes! I'm going to watch every trailer and buy my tickets in advance.
Which is why that movie starts with an Itchy and Scratchy... They're at the Itchy and Scratchy movie.
They are.
So what really astounded me about this episode in retrospect is that Itchy and Scratchy did not jump the shark. Like, they were continued to be used as characters, and they continued to have new adventures. Like, I felt like this could have been the end of these characters. Like, the logical conclusion of these characters.
With the auto show, and they stopped using auto.
Yeah, like the movie we see at the end of this episode could have been the last short, like the ultimate Itchy and Scratchy will not use this again, but I'm glad they kept it up because we'll get to it later on.
The Simpsons will be right back.
Hi, Talking Simpsons listeners. This is your buddy Chris telling you that this episode is brought to you by BarkBox. You know what BarkBox is? If you don't know what BarkBox is, it is committed to making your pooches happy, and they work with local and independent businesses to do this. For you humans out there, BarkBox is a delivery of 4 to 6 natural treats, super fun toys, and they're all curated around a surprise theme each month. BarkBox ships to US and Canada, and the boxes start for as low as $20. We all love our pets, and sometimes we forget to show them love. Now imagine if the gift of 1 million belly scratches could show up at your door with minimal hassle every month. BarkBox contains chews, treats, vitamins, toys, and just in case your dog has any allergies, let them know. They can build you a box that caters to your dog, and every BarkBox is wheat, corn, and soy-free. And just so you know, you can exchange items if your pooch doesn't like it. Have I said the word pooch too much? Maybe. So if you'd like to know the glory of seeing a dog's tail wag on a regular basis, maybe BarkBox is for you. And once again, Talking Simpsons listeners can go to getbarkbox.com/lasertime and get a free month. You like Laser Time shows? Then you might like Bonus Time, Laser Time's weekly bonus show exclusively on patreon.com/lasertime. Here's a taste of what you've been missing.
We've been talking about forever trying to get a group together that might be better for Beta Breakers, but to go as the entire... Man, Ant-Man, Paul Rudd. Paul Rudd. Celery Man, the entire...
Oh, yeah.
Tane, Oyster, Newtane.
I call Newtane.
I know. We knew you would do Newtane. So, like, someone's got to be Oyster, someone's got to be Tane. That thing I can get into.
Get Bonus Time, Laser Time's weekly full-length, uncensored, and ad-free Patreon-exclusive podcast, as well as weekly full-length movie commentaries, wrestling and cartoon video commentaries, physical rewards, the first season of Talking Simpson, and more at patreon.com/lasertime, starting at just $5. You'll help us live, and we'll do our best to help you never be bored again.
There are other bits that reminded me of being a kid in there, too, where you know, I don't know if it is this way for kids now with the internet and all that, but when I was a kid, you could have a movie announced to you by the commercial on TV.
You would never know.
In a month, this movie's coming out.
That's exactly what I was hitting up. The idea that, like, because I remember doing things like that. There's a movie, and I have to call my friends. Did you know there's a fucking Garbage Pail Kids movie?
I remember so many moments like that in my life, like with the Ninja Turtles arcade game. Yeah. Like, this is real. Like,
No promotion for it. We find out on television. Somebody from Entertainment Tonight tells us while they're throwing the credits.
I guess you had to read Variety at that time to know. But, like, as a kid, like, I was watching Fox one night, like, what, The Critic is back? There are new critics?
Yeah.
Like, what? Yeah, exactly.
I remember my dad would have to tell me because he's so fucking NPR obsessed. And every one of those idiots goes on Terry Gross.
Oh, I was going to say Terry Gross.
You know, there's a movie out of this whole Ninja Turtles thing you keep wearing on your shirts and playing with. Like, what?
Yeah, I think by the mid-90s, mainly because that's where you get updates on if a new Mystery Science Theater would be on, that I learned to read TV Guide and Renewing TV.
Which is later referenced in this show, the first Mystery Science reference.
That's true.
Oh, wow, yeah.
And speaking of being a kid, okay, so did you guys ever put action figures in the microwave?
No, but I hated G.I. Joe. I hated most manly toys. I love just cute stuff. I like Barbie. I had Rainbow Bright stuff. So I would definitely torture G.I. Joe characters my aunt would give me, driving nails through them, burying them in sand, melting them with magnifying glasses.
I was kind of a weird kid, believe it or not. I'm on a podcast. I was a weird kid. But after I discovered Nintendo, I'm like, fuck toys. I'm video game guy now. It's all video games.
I'm just... Our episode of Laser Time where we tried to find what's the oldest toy on the toy shelf, and what I had to do was... detail what year every toy came out, and you know, from like Barbie in the 50s to before Transformers in 1984 and then 85, and you do not have something represented on the toy shelf until Power Rangers in 1992.
Oh, wow.
There is not a toy other than Ninja Turtles, there is no toy phenomenon that could crack the Nintendo hold on young boys.
Yeah,
in the
wow, I was one of them. Why. Yeah, well, I did do it, but actually before this episode, so I wasn't inspired to do it by The Simpsons, but I remember it was about 3 years before this episode aired. I had it wasn't James Bond, it was RoboCop. I had a RoboCop toy, and I put him in the microwave part of whatever story
it's
I was
got
telling.
Metal in it, right?
That was part of the story I was telling of, like, I have to put him in some science machine in the story I'm telling with his toy. So I put him in there.
Oh, God.
And it comes out smelling weird. And this is the RoboCop toy that had, like, the cap buster in the back of it. Yeah, and so it had, you know, a metal flicking thing on the back. So I put metal in the microwave. And I then, as a kid who was like, I just told my mom some days later, oh, yeah, I put RoboCop in the microwave. He was fine. And then my mom was like, you put metal in the microwave? Like, you could have exploded. Like, I always forget that. I think I've put metal in the microwave like five different times.
I think I remember when I became disillusioned with toys, I loved the Crash Dummy toys. They were so cool because you were supposed to break them. Yeah. But if you broke them too much, they would break permanently, and that kept happening. And
that extended my interest in toys for one more year
after
puberty.
They were so cool. I loved them
really
so much.
Those are the Darkwing, and then I'm like, I'm going to buy the Darkwing Duck toys and the Bigfoot make-your-own tinfoil crushable car. Sorry, we're too nostalgic here. But the Itchy and Scratchy movie, they're referencing compilation films with usually 30-40% new animation because it's expensive, and also due to the process of animation, it's very rare for a movie of an animated TV show to hit theaters while it's still popular. And I was trying to think of good example, like Care Bears is like the first. It's a strange pioneer in the theatrical animation industry because it did hit that.
Yeah. And about 2 to 3 years after this, Batman: Mask of the Phantasm would hit theaters.
Kind of after the momentum was gone.
The momentum was gone a bit. They did plan on it just being direct to video, and then like, no, we can put this in theaters, and it did not do well in theaters.
It did terribly, and it's really good.
It's until the Nolan films, it was. Easily the best Batman movie.
I still think it is. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, I can totally see that. Like,
I don't think the Nolan movies had aged that well.
No, Dark Knight, I think, is you can hold that one up pretty high.
Dryhall! Also, just the way, like, God, the fight with the Joker, it's the fight to end.
It's really good.
And the music is fantastic. Yeah.
And he fucking bleeds. Like, he bleeds all over the place.
He knocks the Joker's tooth out. Yeah. It's fantastic.
What are you doing? You won't get us both killed.
Can't tell.
Whatever it takes.
If you can't tell, I think we're kind of bonded here as human beings and friends over our love of animation.
I'm playing with a Gumby toy right now, by the way.
Yeah, if you can't see the rest of my room, it is kind of a salute to every era of animation, I'd like to think.
I think this episode is important, though, because it establishes that Itchy and Scratchy are this world's Disney, which we did not have before.
No, they had never been timeless before.
And which again, they would double down on with Itchy and Scratchy Land.
And I know I've said this on a billion podcasts, but I love 1940s, 30s animation. They were screened theatrically in front of movies with Humphrey Bogart, and then they found a new lease on life in the 50s by being screened on television because they still worked. Unlike a lot of the other content made back, like you couldn't tell when this was made, and it's all designed to be work really fast.
Yeah, and these writers grew up watching those reruns.
They did
during their childhoods,
like, because it wasn't quite enough time to fill 30 minutes. You would usually have a children's show host like a Krusty the Clown. So the only thing I was confused by is because with my adult knowledge of this medium, they would have had to have been 1940s cartoons.
Mm.
That Krusty is just pretty much there to shout out to local affiliates and play public domain Merry Melodies.
And then do like one game to say, like, all right, we play the Grand Prix.
That's why Bozo exists, and I think it's still, I think, is the that Bozo, a frame of reference people exist?
The Bozo franchise.
It is a franchise. Yeah. There's been multiple Bozos.
You can be your town's Bozo if you try hard enough.
Well, speaking of television institutions, this episode has a debut.
Does it?
Bumblebee Man.
I believe I have that.
It looks like Henry has a whole history. I want to hear this.
I had that. Hold on. Let me see. Let me burn through these clips then, I guess.
Right.
Boy, you're going to have to be punished for this.
Dad, you could punish me, but that means you have to think of a punishment, sit here, make sure I do it.
Aww.
Or you could let me go play with Milhouse while you spend the afternoon watching unpredictable Mexican sitcoms.
Yay.
Ay, el estómago.
Run along, you little scamp.
So, it's probably his least whimsical adventure, Bumbling Man.
Well, so first off, this is a reference to
El Chavo.
It's a thing that kids couldn't do. Well, they can do now, but I just remember when it was like, as a child raised by television, who was looking to kill time whenever, you could like roll the dice and be like, let's see what will be on this Spanish language channel. I won't understand it.
Telemundo.
But yeah, well, what will be on Telemundo? Sometimes you get Sábado Gigante. Mm-hmm. And
sometimes you get Dibu, like Alf with a puppet, which is a human puppet.
As a boy going through puberty, there were very attractive women on Telemundo.
Sábado Gigante, especially.
Yeah,
right?
on their sketch Susha? Comedy. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is that what, that's where they all, like, every single cast member is Jimmy Fallon and breaks at their own joke.
So this was, in general, a reference to that of just turning on Spanish language television, and as a white person who doesn't understand Spanish, it's fun in a silly
way. It is actually a very specific reference to El Chavo.
So, Bumblebee Man, first appearance, and he's almost always written to just say Spanish language that any high school student in America knows.
It's usually no me gusta, my poor stomach.
Ay, no me gusta. Mm-hmm. Ay, el trabajo. But it is specifically based on El Chapulín Colorado.
Well, not El Chavo.
The red... Well, yeah. El Chavo. Yeah, but the full name, the red grasshopper.
God.
El Chapulín Colorado.
I was talking to my buddy from Brazil, and like that show is huge all over the world.
It is
except
a,
here, but
apparently it's a superhero parody sitcom, and he is a superhero. Is that right?
But it's also had animated shows. It's had movies.
Yeah, and he would have a sidekick who was like had alfalfa, basically, with like painted on freckles, old man. And he was played by actor Roberto Gomez Bolaños, who passed away in 2014.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, recently. And his stage name was Chespirito, which in Spanish means Little Shakespeare.
Wow, really?
Yeah.
It's awesome.
And so, yeah, this was a very specific reference to him. Mm-hmm. And, you know, his character would grow over time. Sometimes he can speak perfect English. Mm-hmm. Other times he can't. In the 22 short films about Springfield.
That's a great, great bit.
I love that bit. And it is that he lives in a Spanish language world, a part of Springfield where he only speaks Spanish. And his life is, the real life is his Bumblebee Man.
He has like a slapstick comedy house where things just fall on him. Yeah.
Ooh, El Naranja.
And this to me is my favorite part of the show. Not just because it involves our, default ending theme.
Tonight on Iron Springfield, we meet a man who's been hiccuping for 45 years.
Kill me. Kill me.
But first, we'll examine the growing itchy and scratchy mania with their new movie premiering today.
I got my ticket.
I'm here live in Korea to give you a first-hand look at how American cartoons are made. But first, let's take a look back at the year 1928. Mm-hmm.
So before we get started with this, this is on the commentary, by the way, a little fact. This scene kind of outraged the overseas animators, and they did not want to work on it.
Because, as they should have.
Yeah.
I agree with him. I agree with their outrage. It's a funny joke.
It looks like a prison camp.
Yes. Exactly. It looks like a prison, period.
Yeah.
And that, I mean, they're being forced to animate it at gunpoint. And yeah,
I think the scene is sympathetic towards the animators, though, even though it's inaccurate.
In a way, yeah. But it's also, I would think it's not sympathetic to the bosses of the Korean animators who are their employing.
Yeah, they're kind of eating their cake and having it, too. Like, haha, you're underpaid.
We talked about that in another episode, right? Or was that the season wrap-up about the process of...
Yeah, the process of animation.
I was talking to a dear friend who just didn't know that all animation almost to this day is the work of slavery. underpaid people and usually the exploitation of foreign labor.
It was funny because in the 80s, it was like all outsourced to Japan and the quality was much, much higher because Japan has a big history with animation. Mm-hmm. But I think there was like the fall of communism in South Korea or something happened where Korea became accessible.
No. South Korea has always been our bros.
Yeah.
That's always where, that's where the home of animation was. Mm-hmm. I don't know why it traveled to South Korea. I know that Japanese animation is more expensive than Korea, and then even Japan started outsourcing it in anime. But this was something I didn't know until this episode, and as a kid, until this episode, that all these cartoons were animated in Korea. And then it's something you find out, they all are done there. But in the commentary, that I believe it was director Jeffrey Lynch saying that it pissed off everybody at the studio in Seoul. Korea is Seoul, South Korea, and then they did come back to them and just like, hey, you draw this, all right?
Yeah.
Wow.
Guys,
they fought back for the first time.
I think the producers were, the writers were taken by surprise, like, oh, we thought it was bad there. And they're like, no, it's the reports, though, of course, this is who would want to say that it's good. It's people exploiting people. But they say that it is a good job and a good facility, and people get paid well. Yeah.
And the cost of living is much lower in South Korea.
It has to be something like that. Because if it's anything like modern game development, it is exploitive and terrible. And I don't know how the process of animation, but we've all read that book, Sick Little Monkeys, and the amount of work that writing that's done in LA with animatics done here, sent to Canada and then sent to Korea, is insane.
In any case, animation is a highly skilled and completely thankless job.
Yes.
And the reason this The Simpsons or Itchy Scratchy Ren and Stimpy is better than Hanna-Barbera cartoons is because of cheaper labor.
Yeah,
when it was just all cheaper labor, like Rocky and Bullwinkle was animated in Mexico for nothing, which is why it looks like dog shit.
Yes.
Rocky and Bullwinkle is hilarious though, but it is horrible animation.
And Ren and Stimpy would send they would do all the layouts in America, which was unheard of. The Simpsons were doing it at the time, too. Mm-hmm. But those are the important poses. They would not just send a storyboard to someplace in the Philippines and say, you figure it out, which is what almost every Hanna-Barbera show would do, and Filmation and all those other companies.
Ugh. And also, it was something, too, I remember in the Korean animation thing. Mm-hmm. In the Miyazaki, the special making of Send It to Hero, or Spirited Away, in that he bemoans the fact that to hit ship date, they have to outsource stuff to Korea. They didn't want to. They wanted to keep all the animation in-house, or at the very least in Japan.
Such a crazy process,
though.
And
they shipped it off to Korea, though, instead. But it is funny, though, that Korea, and I'm not to say, there are no Korean animated films, but I remember, when I was a big anime junkie in the late 90s, it was a big deal that there was, this is made in Korea, but for Korea. And the people in charge are Korean.
They had a really awesome film boom for a little while. And then in a reverse situation, the movie The Host, which is really good. It's like a Godzilla movie, but all of it takes place on the ground and in the daytime. And it's kind of a monster movie, approach to a monster movie you haven't seen. It's a Korean film, and all the effects were done here in the Presidio. by another company.
I love the host so much. Yeah, I mean, great. Especially like it opens with. It breaks the rules of monster movies of like the first time you're going to see the monster is full on and in the daytime.
In the daytime. Yeah.
We are incredible animation nerds, by the way.
We are. And that's what Ken Brockman is getting into. Yes. 1928, that's the same day Disney falsely attributes the birthday of Mickey Mouse. Wow. It is actually...
What's the true story? Are you a Mickey truther, Chris?
Yeah, is that they first made the short Plain Crazy with Mickey. So I love that. Because no one ever says this. Technically, Minnie has the exact same birthday. Nobody wanted to distribute that cartoon. But and then Ken Brockman goes in, and then came Steamboat Itchy. Steamboat Willie is not the first Mickey cartoon. It's the first cartoon in America with sound.
Yes.
And so that's labeled as Mickey's debut, even though that's not technically true. People had seen Plain Crazy, but it's the first time Mickey talked, and it's the first time any cartoon character talked, I think, in the States.
But before Steamboat Itchy, we have That Happy Cat, which is the perfect send-up of, like, 20s animation where it's just like, here's a farm and the animals are dancing, and that's the cartoon. Like, that's all it is.
Always in three beats. It, again, I came upon that revelation recently. The only thing dated about all comedy is pacing, and like that's as far back as I can go, the 1930s. The pacing is so glacial.
But I think they really honed, like, Mickey Mouse was a dick when he was first created. He was a mischievous little prick. Yeah, and he would, like, play animals' udders like an instrument. Like, he would, like, fuck with people.
A lot of animal abuse.
Pull guns on people.
He drank, and that's, I love that, doing the epic Mickey press tours, like Warren Spector, remember that. Those cartoons are a lot of fun. The Halloween's coming up. Watch The Haunted House Mickey. It's great.
Great stuff. Yeah. The Mad Scientist and stuff like that. Yeah.
The Mad Doctor, all that stuff's great. And he kind of got softened as he became a corporate character. But for me, just like, I cannot believe there's an exterior shot of the steamboat. Like, that is just literally from...
they
infer that during the commentaries, and Matt Groening's, like, trying to shush them. Like, didn't we actually copy animation and backgrounds directly? Okay, and he's like, shh, don't say anything.
Sorry, I didn't know that. But, like, that is the shot in Steamboat.
And also
really.
The spinning of the wheel, too, is the same one.
But it is such a glorious... And so if I can make one recommendation for real animation fans, because I saw a fucking 17-year-old YouTuber scared the shit out of me that said Amazing World of Gumball is canceled. But, like, what I love a lot, the show is the funniest. It's carrying the Looney Tunes torch. I can't get a single friend of mine to watch it. I think it's hysterical.
I'll take you up on that, Chris.
I think it's amazing. And one of the most amazing things...
Steven Universe first.
One of the most amazing
things...
That's
true,
things, I
need
to
watch
that. But you don't need to, like... Steven Universe, you got to get to, like, a certain point. Fine. Whereas this is just, like, short, amazing, fun... Like, but what it also does... Amazing World of Gumball uses every kind of animation. They go to school and they talk to a puppet, a CG object, a claymation object, a crude squiggle vision. Like, they're every kind of animation.
It's all mixed
media,
yeah.
So when you look at it, you can see, like, that is moving at a different frame rate. And so is a lot of the itchy and scratchy stuff. And, like, they've never been animated better. And so the revelations I get about the process of animation from watching Amazing World of Gumball to this day, you can get in this episode. Because the itchy and scratchy have never been animated so well. And the Foley work, there's more sound effects in the itchy and scratchy material than they usually get.
Well, speaking of good animation, Chris, my favorite bit in this is the Hitler short. Like, we have never seen before or since such great animation on The Simpsons. Just like a perfect send-up of WB wartime cartoons where it's just like complete unaltered violence with just a message tacked onto the end, like save scrap iron or whatever.
Yeah, well, it's the fuller animation you saw in those old theatrical things. It reminded me, in turn of like Warner, Disney, and MGM.
Yeah.
The extreme violence was almost more MGM or Tex Avery's MGM, though the faces were kind of I thought Itchy looked a bit like Jerry, but also a bit like a Disney cutesy animal.
Yeah.
But then the way the characters would flop around and be rubbery, that felt more like Warner. And then also the wartime background, I was like, well, you just rip that straight out of a Warner World War II
cartoon. If I can be super nerdy, it looks like a direct shot from Commando Duck.
That's what, like, is that Daffy Duck hitting Hitler with a hammer in the back of the head?
That is the only, like, character anybody would recognize today who interacted with Hitler in one of these propaganda shorts. Because it actually, like, nobody, Bugs, Donald, Mickey, they never got close to Hitler.
Yeah, like, there was one short with, like, maybe it was, like, Goebbels or Himmler or somebody, like, somebody stalking Bugs Bunny or Daffy Duck throughout the entire cartoon. Maybe that is Commando Duck.
There was the one with the... There's one of the Three Little Pigs parody with the wolf that is Hitler.
Yeah.
And then there was also that the is, one
it's called Chicken Little, not to be confused for the Zach Braff animated vehicle.
Who could forget?
There was He's a summon in Kingdom Hearts 2, of course. That's
disgusting.
There was also the Daffy one where he fights the eagle, the Nazi eagle.
That's right, yeah. But yeah, Hitler was rarely depicted, you're right, in these cartoons.
It hurts my brain because I try and think of what this is a reference to, but the reality is only Daffy got that close to Hitler once for 1 second, but that has to be what this is referencing.
And that scene actually inspired Al Jean and Mike Reese to create The Critic, because they were like, what if we did a show with animation this good? The Critic would never look that good at all times, but it still looked a little bit better than The Simpsons in terms of animation quality, I think.
Sometimes. In the second season, some episodes look real rough.
That opening is so beautiful, though, for The Critic. Oh, yeah.
I will say, as the Simpsons canon lover in the history, I would say this doesn't 100% jibe with the history of Chester J. Lampwick that would be introduced in season 8 episode.
Oh, yeah, the Itchy and Scratchy place in the world is so all over the place.
I mean, it mostly does fit because they do show Steamboat Itchy again in the Chester J. Lampwick episode. And they still infer that is the first episode, the first Itchy cartoon.
All of this gets a little infuriating, and I don't mind talking about it that much because I look at the wikis and the popular theories, like the Itchy and Scratchy movie is based on the Tom and Jerry movie. Eat a dick. The Tom and Jerry movie had not happened yet.
They postdated this, and it sucks.
It sucks. They talk. It's weird.
It's film romance, too.
It's that the characters are lightly based on Tom and... The characters are based on any theatrical cartoon short. Because Worker and Parasite is based on those weird Czechoslovakian Tom and Jerry cartoons.
The Gene Deitch ones.
The Hitler thing is based on a Looney Tune. The Birth Date and Black and Whiteness are based on a Disney cartoon. God, I'll shut up now.
It's a repository for animation references all over the place. Mm-hmm. And I do like that scene ends with the tale of the real life Itchy and Scratchy.
Yes.
The rat that killed a kitten. but right before this, there was... I just love the randomness of Bart smashing the mustard packets on the ground.
It made me want to do that. That was
people always freeze frame this weird in between frame of Bart looking back at Homer as Homer's asking what he's doing. It's this very weird drawing of Bart with his eyelids half closed and his mouth half open. I've seen it on Twitter like a billion, the Marge crumping picture, whatever the hell that is.
Oh god, the Marge crumping one. I really do love that. That's the best joke in the new series.
That must be from a Zombie Simpsons episode because I don't remember it.
Oh, it totally is. Yeah. It's a recent one.
But that all leads us to, Bart. Bart's what? He's not watching Maggie, and Maggie ends up getting behind the wheel of the car, and creating a prison break.
This was a good joke. This was a thought I had earlier in the episode too, with the grandpa's teeth. That and the Maggie stuff. Whenever it's the three kids hanging out and just being kids, I'm always like, oh, this is shorts. This is Tracy Ullman shorts thing because so many Tracy Ullman shorts are like. The three kids hang out and break things or whatever. Or Maggie gets away and has a crazy adventure.
I'm putting this out there now. We should do a shorts episode as a bonus because I was watching a lot of those last night and some of them are in high quality on YouTube and I think they have great animation. They hold up.
It's just amazing how fast they evolve.
Yeah, really do.
Because we're doing 30-20-10 right now and I think... Recently, the Fox Network launched, and it launched with one program, the Joan Rivers talk show.
Whoa.
Can you imagine? You have to fill 24 hours of airtime, and you made one show. and then within the next April is when Tracy Ullman starts.
Well, they counted on affiliates to cover the rest of it. They're just like, hey, we're a network for 2 hours tonight, and that's it, 2 hours a week.
But Bart finally gets... Oh, sorry, Hank, go ahead.
But I do like the dual lines of Snake in this episode. Yeah. All right, a crime spree. And
Beta, which we might have to put in context for people. Yes. That was the video... cassette format that lost.
It was the less wanted format.
Killed by porn, apparently, because VHS was cheaper, and I guess people go where porn goes, but there's one of several scenes in the series of someone driving recklessly past Wiggum and him not caring.
Oh.
This happens at least 4 times in the show, I think.
Yeah, anybody
like,
get
there's
loved.
A dog driving a bus.
Yeah, and also when Otto's bus drives by, it's like, anybody get the number of that? And,
yeah.
And then in the next episode, nice doggy.
That's a nice reckless drive, Mr. B.
Yeah, Wiggum has gotten very bad this season.
But just diving back into the story, Bart has allowed this to happen with Maggie and finally gets his real punishment.
All right, boy, this calls for the biggest punishment I ever handed down, and this time it's going to stick.
Come on, Homer, this isn't funny.
Damn right. Bart, you can't go to see that Itchy and Scratchy movie ever.
Now I put my animation nerd roots out there. I legit think this is cruel.
And it is cruel.
Because he didn't just say this week or at opening night. It was ever and forever. And like there's just numerous scenes where a family member has to come and plead. And it used to seem silly and like we... But yeah, that's too much.
If I was told like a year, that would break my heart. But I'd be like, so even
you're
on
eight.
VHS, I could never watch
you're
this.
Eight. You, yeah. You're told you can never watch this ever. You would think about that nonstop.
There's a lot of life ahead of you. Yeah.
Dad, you gotta let me see that movie. Can't you just give me a spanking? Come on, go nuts.
Don't point that thing at me.
Bare ass.
I said you're not going to the movie and I'm sticking to it.
Dad, I agree that Bart should be punished, but the Itchy and Scratchy movie is the defining event of our generation. How would you have liked it if someone told you that you couldn't watch the moon landing?
It would be, because if there was a... God, Space Jam is such a terrible comparison.
Ugh.
But it's like if someone said you can't... Donald Duck and Mickey were in a movie, mm-hmm. and you've been weaned on those cartoons for a decade.
Well, Roger Rabbit, right?
Well, Roger Rabbit was a spontaneously created character.
Yeah.
But you were told, like, you can't see the new Star Wars.
Yeah, the Star Wars is the only real comparison I have, because that's the kind of thing we all get mad hype for.
Mm-hmm. Well, I feel like it'll be less special now, but, like, Episode 7 was, the first forward-moving Star Wars in 30 years. That's mm-hmm. exciting.
Yeah.
Okay, so the lining up for stuff... Mm-hmm. I guess they were doing, like, people lined up all the time then, but it really feels more like a parody of now that, like, everybody lines up for everything.
I've had several failed stand-up bits about that, but my girlfriend titled it Line Culture, and I can't stand it, and it's very present in San Francisco. Not only are people camped out right now for a fucking iPhone 7.
I don't wait for shit.
To get a croissant for $5, people will line up for 2 hours. Like, what... What are you trying to... Why do I have to show up to a fucking movie theater for tickets I bought online to a show with a very specific start time, and you show up here 3 hours early? Why does that keep happening?
I think this was like... I remember the writers talking on the commentaries about just being surprised by the lines for like movies like Batman. They would see a lot of movies together, and there would be huge lines for them.
They constantly go back to that they all went to the same screening of 1989 Batman mm-hmm. in production of season one.
Wow.
But by season four, even most of them had families and they weren't hanging out together.
This episode did make me think, though. So when Bart can't see the movie, there's a scene of him like, I'll just entertain myself with my imagination. And he can't do it. And I was like, I was thinking, is it possible for a child to be bored in 2016? That must, like, being bored must be just like a relic of a forgotten age. There is no way anyone could ever be bored anymore.
On 302010, we brought up my first favorite movie, the straight-to-video My Pet Monster, where a little boy...
That's a great video game parody opening.
It really does. Like, it's like one of the first people to animate that, and that's the only...
It's kind of the best part of that movie.
I remember that because I was watching with a friend. I was like, that looks just like a video game. They're like, what's a video game? And I was like, get out of here.
Get out of my house.
I need to
show
you things.
But it was a 45-minute movie. I rented it every weekend. I could watch it over and over. So when I got bored, I would play that movie in my head scene by scene and be totally satisfied.
Wow.
That was probably me in Spaceballs.
I think I did that with, like, Alf episodes, maybe? When I think of the late 80s in pre-Simpsons time. In Simpsons time, that was what I played.
Old Simpsons tapes.
Speaking of stories, I like stories. Do you have this clip? I think it's a great Homer moment, but also the continual dumbening of Homer.
Like, yeah.
His IQ drops about 5 points this episode.
I think I cut that part.
I really wanted a catcher's mitt, but my dad wouldn't get it for me. So I held my breath until I passed out and banged my head on the coffee table. The doctor thought I might have brain damage.
Dad, what's the point of this story?
I like stories.
Well, can I please go to the movie?
I know my punishment might seem a little harsh, but I can't go back on it. You're welcome to watch anything you want on TV.
TV sucks.
I know you're upset right now, so I'll pretend you didn't say that.
Again, going through 302010, and like... Magnum P.I. two-parter and Simon and Simon, there absolutely was a vast ocean of difference between films and TV shows. There was no fucking comparison. If you were to tell me I can't see Terminator 2 and I have to watch Beverly Hills 90210 instead, there's no comparison.
You have to watch Drexel's Class, Chris.
Drexel's Class.
Or Saturday afternoon television.
Yes, like this is like Aliens is out. So what are you going to sit at home and watch fucking Pinwheel?
But
Pinwheel.
Then came a really... When Lisa comes back from seeing the movie, comes a really
great
in-joke.
Mm-hmm. This is like the first big in-joke I think I got at the time.
How was it? It wasn't that great. Be honest. It was the greatest movie I've ever seen in my life! And you wouldn't believe the celebrities who did cameos. Dustin Hoffman, Michael Jackson. Of course, they didn't use their real names, but you could tell it was them. Lisa. Sorry, Bart.
Take that, Sam Edick.
I'm sure you, yes, if you're listening to the show the whole time, you know that they were probably credited as Sam Edick and J. John Smith.
They did not mention Penny Marshall, though, who did not use her real name. Or any name, I don't think. I don't even know if there was a pseudonym there.
I think so, but yeah, it was.
It doesn't sound like she went to a real microphone to record that.
No, it's just like,
again, that's all on Patreon.
I'll do it over the phone. Time.
So in the pre-internet age, like, you could read a magazine or a trade magazine, like there are definitely like news articles that would tell you that's Dustin Hoffman.
Yeah, the news,
in this episode, but
it was the news promoted it as Dustin Hoffman and Michael Jackson, but for legal reasons for Michael Jackson,
in both cases they kept it an open secret, but you didn't really know. Or
but
at least,
this is the show. You're right. This is the show confirming it for you.
Yeah, this was. I mean, even on the commentary for the Michael Jackson episode. Mm-hmm. They finally are just going like, I guess we're not keeping this a secret anymore?
Yeah, I mean, due to recent events I won't mention here, I think we're learning now, and we have been learning, just how restrictive music contracts are. They, like, own your soul. You can't do anything. You have to work with people who have done horrible things to you. It's just, like, a nightmare, yeah.
Ah, yeah, well, Kesha has a Simpsons connection.
Exactly. I didn't want to mention that, but there you go.
I mentioned Kesha.
That sequence, I really like it,
actually. It's the death of the Simpsons. Well, that's when they die,
really. Enough about Kesha. Let's talk about another cool celebrity.
Never want to hear
Mailer.
Yes, the Naked and the Dead? Am I right?
Yes,
okay.
Yeah.
Who wrote the novelization to the Itchy and Scratchy, which is giant.
That's not Leon Uris?
That Norman Mailer wrote very long books.
Yeah.
And it was big enough to crush all the stuff in the trash can.
It's a great visual joke.
And then Milhouse bullies Bart, which is a very random moment.
He teams up with Nelson.
I've seen the Itchy and Scratchy movie 13 times.
I've seen it 17 times. You guys must be getting pretty tired of that movie by now.
No one who saw the movie would say that. Let's get him!
I hope that's still happening with kids, seeing movies, needing to see movies in the theaters multiple times.
Amazing Spider-Man 2 is great!
Well, stop it, Bob. Maybe Captain America Civil War.
That's better. That's
well,
better.
I think it more is the kids just...
Force
Don't
Awakens.
Kids just wear out their DVDs of Disney
They do.
Films,
DVDs, like, we're in the...
Blu-rays,
but
whatever.
Like
the screen, the
All
tablets.
This joke reads to me like Jurassic Park. And that was like... That movie got me woke on film. Stray woke, y'all. AF. And then, I think my friend and I were kind of in a competition to see it over and over again. So to be able to convince your parents to take you to see a movie 13 times, which I did for Jurassic Park, because it was in the theater for over a year. I know I'm not a kid anymore. I know I see a movie that looks good. I'll wait to steal that on BitTorrent. That's what I say in my brain.
I'll
now.
Watch my Russian stream.
Yeah.
I felt very proud of myself for going to a movie theater and watching a movie recently.
Seeing
that was
Hunt
not
for the,
a Marvel film.
In the same weekend, seeing Peach Dragon and Hunt for the Wilder People. Two great films shot in New Zealand.
I saw Hell or High Water, which is a really good little modern Western.
You're both patrons of the fine arts, officially.
But of course, then I wouldn't be watching TV. Can't you see the bind I'm in? I love that line. I think of that all the time.
Okay, yeah, I got that.
It's incredibly selfish. I love it.
Palmer, we'd like to talk to you.
But then I won't be watching TV. You can see the bind I'm in.
Dad, you've got to let Bart see that movie. I've never seen him like this. He has the demented melancholia of a Tennessee Williams heroine.
Don't you think I know that?
Palmer would know that.
It's been 2 months. You laid down the law, and I'm proud of you. But I think we've gotten through to him.
Ah, sweet, soft-hearted Marge. You just can't see the big picture. If I stick to my guns, the boy could wind up Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. If I fail, the best he could do is judge at a Mr. Tight Buns competition. I can't let that happen. I won't let that happen, and I can't let that happen.
All right, so that is pretty much... I love the being...
That's the joke.
That's kind of my line of the show, but then also so is this.
We're home!
We got beats!
I don't know.
It's a non sequitur that I love. It's a kid getting excited about a weird thing. But yeah.
And so the biggest plot hole in this is that there is no way a theater wouldn't just sell Bart the ticket, even if Homer told them, don't sell my son a ticket.
Especially in this era of movie theaters.
That would never happen. I've sold movie tickets to kids. I worked as in the box office at an AMC theaters from 2003 to 2004, and when I was there, like, I only enforce the R rating stuff when I want to just be a dick. I'm like, oh, you're 15, you want to see a R-rated movie? I technically don't care, but I also love the power I have to deny
I'm
this
I'm the god,
movie.
Yeah.
So fuck you. But otherwise, I'd just be like, yeah, watch whatever. I don't care.
And I know I shouldn't get off on this rant. It just, I love all my early theater experiences. And this is also an episode from a way earlier time in our pop cultural history. And the Aztec Theater is still around forever.
I love the old movie house motif that
yeah.
they have.
Is like, there, like, think of every place you saw a movie when you were a kid. Is that movie theater still there? I would argue that it is not. It was replaced with stadium seating, moved closer to the mall. Yeah. It's not still there.
Mine is, but it's still shitty. It wasn't one of those old movie okay. houses that we have in you know, San Francisco mm-hmm. or even my hometown of Youngstown, which was turned into a porn theater in the 70s yeah. and then abandoned in the 80s and then... you know, knocked down in the 2000s. So.
Again, I've said that a billion times on other shows. I watched The Care Bears and Pinocchio, The Emperor of the Night, in the Tallahassee, Florida Northwood Mall. Mm. Northwood Mall was eventually bought by the state, and my first job was at the Department of Business and Professional Regulation, where I scanned documents and corrected them into a computer. Inside of the theater, I saw my first favorite movie.
Wow.
What an awful... These ceilings are really high. Oh, my God. I'm in the theater. This
oh,
sucks.
There's something that, like, in my hometown of Berkeley, where mm-hmm. I live now, they don't knock any buildings over mm-hmm. in the Bay Area because everything's so expensive. Mm-hmm. So there's a dollar store by me and has a huge, huge ceiling. And I walk in there. I'm looking up, like, what's going... Oh, my God. This used to be a movie house. Like, yeah. there's an ornate balcony and, like, all these fixtures. Yeah, this beautifully decorated ceiling.
Really
I'm like,
sad. And the Mission in San yeah. Francisco, like... the Alamo Drafthouse revitalized one of the theaters. The other one, across the street, old and beautiful, kept the front facade, found more profit being a parking garage.
Oh,
they hollowed yeah. out the whole thing, and you park there now, and they make more money.
That's I mean, sad. In Berkeley, there's a few abandoned ones, too, though. I do like mm-hmm. The California Theater is still a really good little
it's
theater.
It's more than 100 years old, and I was like, what were they playing in the early yeah.
you
teens?
Guys owe it to yourself as East Bay folk to go to the Paramount if you haven't.
I've been there, man. It's amazing.
It's built during Prohibition, and you can see the areas where they hid liquor.
Yeah.
It's great.
Literally like a palace. Yeah. It's beautiful.
So the Itchy and Scratchy movie finally leaves theaters. And
but then there's a fucking news story about it, Hank. Yeah.
I'm here at the Springfield Aztec Theater, where after 8 months and 9 Academy Awards, the
wow.
Itchy and Scratchy movie is showing for the last time. Tomorrow, a new movie starring Liza Minnelli and Mickey Rourke will open.
Yes.
Will it be as successful? Only time will tell.
Well,
I guess you won.
No, son. We both won. You don't know it now, but I've started you on the road to somewhere very special.
It's the only thing that makes the show cute.
What's that?
I still think this is cruel of Honk.
It's pretty cruel. But this new movie Brockman's talking
that's
about,
so
it's probably
funny.
Not as bad as Honk if you're horny, but I feel like Liza Minnelli and Mickey Rourke were at the lowest point of their careers
in
at this
93,
time.
In 93, absolutely.
Yeah. What was Mickey Rourke even doing? Just getting uglier? I mean, what was happening?
I mean, they both were in different states of drug problems.
Ah, that's
at that
right.
point. And neither of them had starred in a movie in a very long time. So the idea of them together, though also... The idea in 1992 that they'd still be alive, both of them would still be alive in 2016,
yeah.
was probably a crazy idea. And yet,
here they are. Liza Minnelli in Cabaret, though, is beautiful.
Gorgeous. She's
and
gorgeous.
I do.
Well, I love Liza. I love Liza.
You got to come out on every episode. I hate how adamant Homer is about this, because it's the only thing he's ever stuck to, and it hurts
yeah.
Bart.
And the thing that Bart really didn't watch it for 40 years.
This would devastate me. In fact, I would probably be doing more podcasts right now if my father prevented me from seeing the movie I was most looking forward to.
I'm glad I grew up with lax parenting.
Yeah.
It really helped me out.
But the future stuff, which I sort of hate.
2032.
Is so great.
I was expecting more future jokes coming into this after watching
but
some of Futurama.
The funniest one that I didn't recognize, because Homer and Bart are walking down the street. Bart is now a Supreme Court justice. And that it says the Itchy and Scratchy movie in a very small parenthetical,
yes.
also Beauty and the Beast. That is a great joke. I didn't realize at the time that Beauty and the Beast was kind of critically, I don't have another word for it, that
it was beloved.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
It won an animated film to be nominated
for an Academy
Oscar,
Award.
The best picture.
They had to create an award just for animated films because, like, yeah, maybe these movies can sometimes be as good as these other
I say
movies.
Fuck that category because every piece
it's
of garbage
awful.
Ends up in that.
It's
yeah.
awful. I hate it all.
Though, it's funny that this episode first feels like a real critic-y episode,
yeah.
but then ends with a Futurama, yes. yeah. like the pilot for yeah. Futurama. It's both of the spiritual successors to The Simpsons, which then didn't last as long as
it's
The
funny,
Simpsons.
It's bookended by those, you're right. Yeah. And I feel like this was the last time a Soylent Green joke could be funny. I mean, they've been overused to hell and back. I love the Phil Hartman SNL sketch, like, Soylent cow pies are people!
People,
yeah.
people!
One senior citizen and one Chief Justice of the Supreme Court.
I'll get it, son.
That'll be $650.
Don't.
One Soylent Green. Hold the butter.
Soylent Green.
Didn't get it at the time. People, the holy trilogy of Charlton Heston as Jesus is Soylent Green, Omega Man, and Planet of the Apes.
Oh, Omega Man's so good.
All of them he dies in the end.
Yeah.
For your sins.
They're all beautiful.
For the sins of society. And Soylent Green, I know that joke is sort of hack. But
it wasn't at this point.
Yeah, it wasn't, because I think it was like kind of a small movie.
Yeah.
And it is so good. It is great. The People Scoopers. Ah!
I think it became an older...
Women are furniture.
It became an overdone joke because the kids who grew up watching it then started writing comedy. And the Simpsons were one of the first to get to it. Okay, so this is not a dream sequence. Mm-hmm. This is not like an imagination. Mm-hmm. This is 40 years in the future. And so
I still
take it as canonical. When they've done later fast-forward episodes and Bart's not on the track to be Supreme Court Justice, like, it kind of bothers me. I don't like that. And that's why I liked in the Ren Faire episode of Lisa's Wedding Day.
That's the only one I feel like is canonical.
Bart says, but I'm just working all this aggression before I go to law school.
Oh.
Implying that he is going to law school to become a lawyer, and that is the track to become a judge and then a Supreme Court judge.
Well, this did bug Mancarening, tying this future down for Bart. Yeah, he did not like that idea, it not being a dream sequence.
I've always kind of, I don't know, I hold them as like alternate timelines that serve that episode.
Yeah.
And I don't take them very seriously.
I'm not offended by it. I know
it really
won't happen.
Canonical, I know. But I like when they stick with that and stick with him being on the track to go to law. Mm-hmm. So that's why I was less a fan of him becoming just, you know, a judge, a wannabe Jimmy Buffett. Mm-hmm. That episode I liked. Though that episode has funny bits, but liked it a little less.
It did predict President Trump. I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
He's the one who appointed Judge Bart Simpson.
Yeah.
That's true.
Lifetime. But I have to point this out. As I get older, so do my parents. And this is sort of what it's like.
It really got me in the end of this. I did not expect that.
Sort of what it's like to watch stuff with my dad now.
Yeah.
Which one's the mouse?
Itchy.
Itchy's a jerk.
Yeah.
That's sweet.
Yeah, that really does get me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The idea now, as a kid, it was meaningless to me. But like the idea of why, like my dad's getting older.
Glad we can talk
about
that.
Just connecting with him.
I brought it up on a friend gathering. Like, is anybody else's dad getting slower? This is like in the head and speech.
They're all getting a little slower.
Yeah, it's happening.
You know, actually. Yeah, I'm going to ruin a story I'll tell in a year on this podcast, but the weirdest sync up of this was, so my grandfather on my dad's side, who I called Papa Daddy because he was my
South people.
Papa Big Daddy.
Is Papa Daddy and he's from Arkansas. But anyway, so he was visiting us in Florida. He almost never visits us, but he visited us. And he actually would pass away just like 4 years after this. But so he came and visited us. And it's Simpsons night, so we're watching The Simpsons. Mm-hmm. And he's going to watch it with us. And so I thought it's just any old random episode. It starts with one joke, and he watches it. He laughs a little at that. Then he falls asleep while we're watching it, as Grandpa would. Mm-hmm. And this episode would then turn out to be the Grandpa versus Sexual Infertility, which is all about a cross-generational connection between Grandpa Homer and his children.
Wow.
I was like, I think it was so obvious the connection to us in the room that we didn't want to talk about it. We're
That's
like,
a weird episode to watch with your parents in the room.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
They're reverse vampires, Bob.
I thought so.
Reverse vampires. So anyway, that was... I still think back on that, too, as like one of my favorite... The joke he laughed at was when there's more than one way to get high, baby. And then my papa daddy said, He sure did get high, huh? His car went up.
Like, and they went...
Oh, you called him your papa. That was adorable, by the way.
I do like Itchy's a jerk is a real Moe's, their leader comment. Yeah. And you like that kind of reaction to something you're watching with your parents. I was back home recently talking to my mom. We were talking about politicians, and I forget who she was talking about. It was some politician, and she was like, that's just like something out of the Bart Simpson show.
The
like,
Bart Simpson yeah. show.
And also Bart and Homer sitting in front of the... screen that is an MST3K thing.
Yeah, on the commentary they said that's their one of like maybe two homages in the entire series to MST3K. One it will be on in Moe's Bar.
The Burns a Shot episode.
Yes, my favorite episode. Yeah. So stay tuned for that
Part
one.
Part one. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and lastly, the thing I want to talk about is that they were going to show nothing of the movie in the theater, but
they felt it was
a cop out. So instead, they took that railroad scene that was going to be earlier in the show and put it there.
Oh, they
so
moved you'd it.
See
okay,
something, and so
but it's lavish.
It looks better than most of the regular.
I
want to
give them credit for that because it looks of a higher quality than a normal Itchy and Scratchy episode.
But maybe so when they say it would have been a cop out to never show the movie.
Yeah.
But oppositely, they set up that this movie was so amazing. It was the greatest movie anyone had ever seen.
It seems to be 40 seconds long.
Yeah, yeah. And you see, you're like, this is just Itchy and Scratchy.
Yeah. Like in retrospect, maybe they shouldn't have shown it and put that scene in earlier because I feel like... it could never live up to the what all the kids were saying, what the critics were saying, the 9 Academy Awards, like everything. I mean, it was a very lavish scene that we should have seen.
Best costumes? How many Academy Awards are there?
But I feel like, again, it was good that this was not the jumping of the shark of Itchy and Scratchy when it could have been. They could have just been like, this is one of the things we just won't do anymore, like Otto. Like, we're done with Itchy and Scratchy now.
Itchy and Scratchy Land is one of my favorite episodes ever.
Oh, it's like nothing but jokes, and I love it. Yeah.
They don't even jump the shark in the Poochie episode.
No, like, no.
It pushes it, but it doesn't.
Until Frank Grimes.
Yeah.
That's the perfect jumping of the shark.
Love
when the show should have ended by my standards. Anyways,
it's all good. Frank Grimes is coming back.
Thank you for shut up, Chris.
Yeah.
Thank you. I will not acknowledge that on this podcast. But thank you so much for listening to Talking Simpsons. This is probably our longest episode because
they used to be half an hour.
Oh my god. We are the biggest animation dorks, and this is an episode all about animation. Expect the same from Itchy and Scratchy Land when we learn all about the Nazi roots of Roger Myers Senior.
We're gonna go downstairs, get hammered, and come back and watch Donald Duck cartoon so my fucking eyes bleed.
Neat. That's a great way to live your life. I'm Goofy and heroin, so that's one way to go. So yes, I've been your host, Bob Mack. You can find me on Twitter as Bob Servo. I also do the classic gaming podcast, Retronauts. You can find that every Monday at retronauts.com or usgamer.net. All these guys have been on it, and you'll like it a lot. And I also write for somethingawful.com, a comedy article every other Thursday for the past 11 goddamn years. I know, I'm full of ideas that are unprofitable, Henry. Where can we find you?
H-E-N-E-R-E-Y-G on Twitter. That's where you'll find all my thoughts on this election, and you can block me at some point. Or just turn off retweets.
Guess
okay?
what? Henry doesn't like one of the guys.
The guy in it. I don't like the man in it. But anyway, yeah.
The man.
I write for fandom.com, but also I'm still part of the Laser Time podcast family. You can hear me on so many great podcasts, including, you could go back and listen to my old comic book podcast, Cape Crisis. There were 200 amazing episodes of that. And also you can hear tons of great exclusive things that I'm on patreon.com/lasertime, where for $5 a month you can access to so many great things. At least $5 a month, you could get more if you wanted, but you can get the entire first season of Talking Simpsons along with our season 2 and season 3 wrap-up specials only on patreon.com/lasertime.
That's like 8 hours of the show you probably haven't heard before.
I know,
you're so good at that plug. I'm so glad I never have to do it. What I was trying to plug is lasertimepodcast.com. It's where all our shows and our videos live. You've heard me plug things in the past that you're probably not interested in, judging by the analytics of our traffic. but what I was trying to remember, I've written a couple really deep animated articles. I can only remember who...
Roger Rabbit?
Yeah, the 10 things you didn't know about Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Animal Olympics.
Jesus. That is what... I got to show you some. But Henry, you did most of the work on it, but it was about animated grudges... That played out on film, and some of the stuff we're talking about, you can see, flex our knowledge of how knowledgeable we are.
I love doing that article, and it was all inspired by that Sick Little Monkeys book.
It was actually all inspired. It came out of a raging fight between the two of us that then turned into a great article.
You made it productive. You made it work. That's always nice to hear.
Yeah, it was pretty neat. I've never seen that happen before. Like, You motherfucker! That is a good idea. let's talk about that now.
Well, thank you for listening to this long, long episode of Talking Simpsons, which I love to do. And we'll be back next week with Marge getting a job. Mm-hmm. See you then.
Infotainment.